shout out to everyone. Yeah. Thank you for tuning in to yet another live and powerful segment of Live from D-Block. I'm your vivacious host, Ezekiel Thomas, the voice of conscience and reason, and I'm deeply honored for the privilege of your time. I want to welcome you to another segment of insightful commentary to not only the crippling beliefs that characterize criminal thinking, but also a look into the very nature of emotional pain that drives a troubled life, and to expound to some degree on the path to healing that not only eludes those incarcerated, but also those who are law-abiding citizens who may struggle daily with depression and with issues of self-hatred and with issues of anxiety. How do we heal an emotional injury that damages our self-esteem to the point of self-hatred? How do we heal a wound to our faith in the possibility of happiness? How do we develop the unique ability to transform adversity into an opportunity for self-advancement? How do we transform crisis into a focus that leads to self-transformation and power? These are very profound questions because they represent the enormous challenges in our life that we all face to find sanity, meaning, and purpose in the midst of failure, disappointment, and sadness. And in many respects, it's the same kind of sadness that feeds the bitterness, which fuels criminal rebellion and leads crime or criminals to rationalize the victimization of other people. So learning how to heal emotional wounds inside of our own minds is not only a challenge that's exclusive to those who are in prison, but it's a universal challenge of all humanity. Suffering and despair are the common truths of all people. We have all been wounded in a profound way. We have all been wounded emotionally and have been left with scarred memories of fear, sadness, and bitterness. We all struggle with unforgiveness. We've all had feelings of resentment for having been treated unjustly and unfairly. And we've all been rejected and abused at some point in our life by those we've trusted and loved. So emotional affliction is a part of our universal identity as people. And it is the phantom that eventually will haunt each of us subconsciously. And being that it is an inescapable part of human destiny, why not discuss it? Why not analyze it so as to demystify the path forward that leads to healing? And that's what we have sought to do with this forum and with this podcast. Now, in our last segment, we asked a very profound question. What is an emotional wound? And we answered that in summary, saying an emotional wound is a life vision that's paralyzed by crippling beliefs that limits the way the person sees possibility, self-worth, in human relationships. The beliefs that I'm describing inform this marginalized vision of reality. And such a vision of reality usually originates from past life experiences that have been characterized by what I call the twin T's, trauma and tragedy. See, it's something you must understand, right? Grief has this extraordinary power to take away our ability to imagine. This is why a part of the healing process involves freeing our imagination from the tunnel vision of hopelessness, which sees possibility as another opportunity to experience failure and shame. This is what I call a pain-centered mentality, and it locks the vision of the imagination of a person in place so that the only thing that that person sees is the worst possible outcomes for his or her life. It's trapped, this mindset, in a loop of redundancy where it continuously sees the present moment through the eyes of past hurt. Now, deprogramming this mentality requires us to be critical, it requires us to be systematic, so that those subtle and very detailed nuances of emotional aggravation, be they beliefs, be they thinking errors, or be they traumatic memories, are brought to bear and are addressed holistically and with the intent to bring about some type of solace and reconciliation in the person. Which brings us to today's segment, which follows as a sequel in our previous forum entitled How to Heal, Enlightening the Path to Emotional Balance and Sanity. And as we have said, the task of learning to restore health to our emotional life and one that redeems a troubled mind is a universal task. It's a universal challenge. So let's continue forward with our conversation. We have defined emotional pain, as I said, as a sort of life vision paralysis. And this paralyzed and crippled vision of possibility is often driven by broken beliefs. And we also stated that in order to change the basic life vision of the person, defined by damaged self-esteem and a broken self-confidence, that we must change the very way they read and interpret the narrative of their life. We can't change our memories, but we can change how we see the things that we remember. Many times, the story that emotionally troubled people tell themselves is a very selective narrative. It's a very one-sided view of life that focuses only on tragedy. that focuses only on disappointment, sadness, and failure. So it's customized in such a way that it only is able to produce a very limited range of emotions. You understand? Bitterness, self-hatred, fear, distrust, etc. See, the narrative that we select as an interpretation of our life determines not only our emotional temperament, but it also determines our expectations, our responses, and our vision of the future. If you tell this to the person that's broken, if you force them to address the way that they think in light of this truth, then you will move them in a step of healing. If you want to heal the person, be it a criminal with debilitating life beliefs or a troubled person struggling with chronic depression, to heal the person, you must first heal the narrative. And to heal the narrative, you have to broaden the perspective and focus of that person so that the total portrait of his or her life is brought into scope and perspective. And let me tell you what I mean by this. I can give you an example. The selective narrative of a troubled mind usually focuses only on the negative events in that person's life. When I was trapped inside the delusion of the criminal mentality, I too customized my life narrative to fit around ideas of victimization, self-pity, entitlement, helplessness, you name it. The result was that I became a very angry young man with a victim's complex and an entitlement mentality. But I also became a criminal philosopher who rationalized violence, aggression, and predatory behavior as a legitimate means for seeking redress for grievances that I had with society, with people, and even with God. But this narrative was edited so that it would only include pain and exclude memories of kindness, memories of compassion, and memories of love, so that I could justify my indifference towards others without offense to my own conscience. In other words, I had to focus only on the bad and negative life experiences in order to arrive at a place of bitterness. That's right. It's not until I allowed myself to see the totality of my life, that included those episodes of forgiveness, mercy, and kindness, that I was able to challenge my stereotypes and change my fundamental view of people. There was no way I could continue to rationalize my criminal behavior with evidence in my own mind and in my own heart of human goodness in others. Now, this in no way is an attempt to minimize the reality of suffering that many people experience daily. But what this does say, and what this does emphatically affirm, is that even suffering is punctuated by episodes of prosperity, happiness, and wellness. So to heal a troubled mind, we have to heal a damaged narrative that's been edited to reflect only a one-sided view of life. A view of life that creates the delusion that we have been more victims of life than we have been victorious against life's adversity. And for those who believe so, those who believe that they've been more of victims of life than the opposite option, I want to share with you an extraordinary story of epic proportion. This fascinating story is about an individual who has won a magnificent race. This race is no extraordinary competition. It's a race for life. And there are many challenges on the path of this race, many odds that makes it disadvantageous to the runner and to the competitor. The terrain is almost impassable, the territory is uncharted, and the other contenders are not only hostile, but violently aggressive and number in excess of 900 million. This is by no stretch of the imagination an ordinary race that follows any of the conventional protocol for racing that we know. There are no rules, and you cannot be disqualified for fouls. Winning is the objective, and the end justifies the means. Suddenly, they're off in this race. And this lone racer finds him or herself in a very violent, tumultuous situation as the race accelerates forward, right? There are no landmarks, there are no signs to indicate direction. There's no light by which to navigate things. It's just sheer human will and intuition for survival, all the while fending off attack and violence and adversarial aggression from the other contenders. At one point, this lone racer comes to a fork in the road and has to decide in total darkness without any guidance which direction to take. Left or right, and against all odds and against mathematical probability for failure, the lone racer selects the correct turn and accelerates towards victory. Now, at this point, I can almost anticipate some excitement in knowing who this extraordinary person is or was that has completed such a magnificent and impossible race. But before I reveal the identity of this magnificent person, I want to first reveal some more things about this individual that I believe will deepen your awe of him or her. Not only does this individual win the impossible race against 900 million other people in the dark, in unfamiliar territory, around hostile competitors. But he or she does so without eyes, without hearing, and without even having legs. Who is this extraordinary person, you might ask? Well, my friend, that extraordinary person is you. Biology tells us that the sperm's quest for life in the womb is a tumultuous one, that there is an arduous struggle for life as each individual sperm vigorously exerts itself aggressively in an effort to win sanctuary in the mother's egg. Fertilization is victory. And we are told that the list of contenders for this one egg is in excess of 900 million, and that the fallopian tube, like a fork in the road, divides into two separate sections. One leads to the egg and the victory of fertilization in life, the other leads to death and failure. You, my friend, somehow with no legs, no eyes, no ears, no brain, discerned the right path in total darkness without guidance against 900 million odds and found victory. How then can any person declare that they are the victims of life? How can they deny that they are victorious when the very foundation of their existence as a human being is victory? How can the narrative for our life be truthful when we denounce the inherent greatness that lies within each of us that endows us with this unique capacity for victory against overwhelming odds? Tragedy and sadness does not negate the victorious reality of our life, a reality that in spite of whatever we experience, continues to inform us that we have what it takes to win against overwhelming odds. We did it once, we can do it again. To heal our minds of its marginalized vision of what's possible, we must expand our narrative of who we are and what inside of us is possible. And with that, oh yeah, that concludes our segment and commentary today. I am hopeful that what I've said today helps facilitate enlightenment and leads to some type of self-enrichment and personal empowerment. I hope it leads to the path that ends in healing. In our next segment, we will explore this topic a little more and discover some more insights onto the path of self-enrichment. But in the meantime, I want you to stay positive, you to stay focused, and above all, for you to stay healed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.